Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Japanese Impressions, color woodblock prints from the Rodbell Family Collection, is the first exhibition at the Clark to focus on the Institute's permanent collection of Japanese prints. The exhibition spans more than a century of Japanese color woodblock printing, as represented by three generations of artists who produced prints from the 1830s to the 1970s. I went to the Clark in Williamstown recently to check out the exhibition with J.A. Clark, the Manton curator of prints, drawings, and photographs at the museum. I began by asking Jay how the exhibition came to be at the Clark.
Adele Rodbell, who's one of our longest-serving docents here at the Clark, contacted me not too long after I started working here in 2009, and she mentioned that she had a modest collection of prints, and did I want to come see them at some point? So I did, and was completely blown away by her collection. Pristine condition, a great, great range of artists. And then in 2014, she gave part of her collection to the Clark. So at that point, we thought about doing an exhibition. And then in 2016, we decided to do it in this space, and then we wanted to expand it. So not only do we have works from the Rodbell Family Collection, which is the majority of the exhibition, but we also have loans from private collections.
How did Adele's collection begin, and how was she keeping all of this work at her house?
That's a great question. She and her family lived in Japan for 3 years. Her husband was there for his work, and she obviously got to know the country. They traveled a lot. She started to learn about the history of Japanese art, both printmaking, ceramics, calligraphy, etc. And she just became completely enamored with the prints. She bought a couple of works while they were living there, but for the most part, her collecting began back here in the U.S.
How did you put the show together? How many pieces are in it? How is it organized?
So there's just under 90 objects in the exhibition, and the very first room is kind of a historical, chronological overview of everything that you're going to see in the exhibition itself. And then, so that's the first room, which is really an introductory room, and then the rest of the exhibition goes chronologically from the 1830s to the 1970s.
All right, let's check it out.
All right. One of the things that we wanted to do in the entrance, my colleague Josh Maher, who's our graphic designer, he wanted to have sort of a dark forest of trees as you walk in the exhibition, and then you walk in and you sort of come into brightness. So we have a lot of bright colors in the exhibition, not just in terms of the works of art themselves, which are very colorful, but also we wanted the walls to be relatively bright as well.
The entrance is very dynamic. I like that a lot. So the first room you mentioned is a sort of overview.
Sort of overview, exactly. And there's one work that's kind of interesting in the sense that you're going to see some repetition. One of the most famous views in Japan is of Mount Fuji. So that's sort of a leitmotif going through the exhibition. And here we see an early color woodblock print by Hiroshige. And we see Mount Fuji in the background with these beautiful flowers and ferns and waterways kind of working its way through it. So that's an early woodcut in this introductory section, and then let's look at another one.
Okay.
That's quite a bit later in time. So this one is over 100 years later, an artist named Sekino, and this one is obviously very different in that it's much more modern and it's much more contemporary in its feel, but there's a very similar treatment of the color woodblock, and here you actually see the curved grains of the wood. But what this artist does, instead of artists like Hokusa, you see the grain of wood in all the colors. What he does is he takes the grain of wood and turns it into a motif, so the grain of wood then becomes the water. So he uses it in different ways, and the textures are quite different.
That's very beautiful. So you've mentioned a few names. Are there stars? Are there legends of the Japanese woodblock print? Are there people, big names, your Picasso of this, your Degas, etc.?
I would say from the Western point of view, there are probably different stars if you're from Japan. You may know the names in a different way. But I would say in the West, in America specifically, the sort of star names are the first two artists in the exhibition, which would be Hiroshige and Hokusai. Hokusai is the one that did the Great Wave, the very famous image of the wave coming down on boats.
Should we get to the next room?
This is a work by Hokusai, and this is from the same series as his very famous, The Great Wave. So again, we have that's all various views of Mount Fuji. And this is really a stunning print from a private collection. So we have Mount Fuji. It looks like it's summertime. There's no snow on it. There's green. There's grass. There's trees. But then you look at the reflection on the water, and Mount Fuji is actually a snow-capped mountain. So that's one of the things he's interested in doing, is sort of playing with the sense of time and the various seasons.
The colors are so beautiful, not overly saturated, but quite bright and full, like it's like a really full-bodied feeling color. How is the color created? What are they using for that?
They use mostly natural pigments, and these are printing inks. And each color that you see in this entire exhibition, whether it's just a black and white print, which is a one-color print, there's only one or two of those in the exhibition, or there's 25 prints, each color is put on the print by a different block of wood.
J.A. Clark is the Manton Curator of Prints, Drawings, and Photographs at the Clark in Williamstown. She's taking us through their current exhibition, Japanese Impressions.
So this is the earliest print in the Rod Bell collection. This is another hokusai from a different series called A Tour of Waterfalls in Various Provinces. And a lot of these prints, what they do is they're sort of taking you, they're mostly made in series, and they're taking you across different parts of Japan and showing you different views and different areas. And what we see here is a very specific waterfall. And what we see are these men climbing up a hill to pray at a shrine. And the man here on the top is praying at the shrine. But it also has this very strange, like, 1970s album cover look about it.
It does, that's true.
It's very sort of contemporary and a little bit abstract. And the waterfall just barely even looks like a waterfall. Very abstracted view of water.
So this is from 1832, you mentioned. The artist created them, and then how have they been preserved over time? Were they always been on exhibition? Were they sold to private people? What's the sort of history of the actual piece?
Of the objects themselves. Well, Adele, she took very good care of her objects, so the colors are very lush and rich. If you show these over extended periods of time, they become quite faded, and they don't look at all like they used to. But they're collected by private collectors, collected by museums. Interestingly, the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston was one of the very first museums to collect very extensively in Japanese woodblock prints. This whole room is of Hiroshige, and Hiroshige is an artist that I probably knew better than all of the other ones in the exhibition when I began this project, because I work a lot on 19th century European art. And Hiroshige specifically was very beloved by the French Impressionists and the American Impressionists, and they were really fascinated by his dynamic use of space and a sort of strange bird's eye perspective on the landscape. And the Impressionists drew very heavily from his work and even copied some of his prints specifically. Well, if we look at this print over here on this wall by Hiroshige, this is called Plum Estate, and it's from his famous series 100 Views of Edo. And Vincent van Gogh copied this in a painting, which is actually in the Van Gogh Museum, in his own style. And what he did, and you can see it on the website in the Van Gogh Museum, is he had characters, Japanese characters, all around the print. But artists like Van Gogh would copy these works specifically, and then other artists like Whistler, he was very interested in their sort of blocking out of space. Whistler and Degas, for example, like you see here in this other Hiroshige, also from 100 Views of Edo, you see sort of carved out a window in a room, and the artist is actually at a restaurant looking out at a view of the mountains and the water and boats and people. But it's this very abstract cutting off of space, sort of bringing it very close to the picture plane, and then you look very far into the distance through the view. This is actually another example of that. So here we see a very famous shrine in the distance, but it's not necessarily, or I'm sorry, a temple. It's not necessarily the temple that he's focusing on, but he's really focusing on the doorway that you have to look out of to see the temple, and then you have this beautiful lantern at the top.
Right, so you're inside looking out at a winter view of the temple and trees and people outside. It's really, really lovely.
Really beautiful, yeah. And what we have, there's a number of different cartouches that you see in these images. And one is usually the name of the series. And
then what's a cartouche?
It's sort of a band. It's almost like a little, like a tiny little flag or a little section in a different color on a very small portion. This one is rectangular. It looks kind of like a ribbon hanging down. That has the name of the series. And then to the left of it has the name of the actual print in Japanese characters. And then the artist's name is usually down below on the left. But then all around this print, there are different seals and markings. One is a censor seal. These all had to pass by censorship, to make sure there wasn't anything politically offensive or morally, what was perceived as morally offensive. And then you have the publisher's seal and the printer's seal. So it's really all about collaboration and all the different people that it took to create and produce and publish these images.
And I'm seeing some seals here. Is there more behind the mat, or am I seeing everything you're
not
talking
usually.
About?
Usually what we tried to do in matting all of these works is we tried to show everything that the viewer would be interested in seeing.
Great. Yeah. That's really cool.
And another thing we did for this exhibition, because the Clark's collection is largely Western, all the frames we had for these works of art would have just looked really strange, gold leaf frames that didn't really fit for this work. So one of my colleagues, Frank Gregory, he produced these beautiful cherry wood frames specifically for the exhibition, and they're really more appropriate for Japanese prints than other frames would have been. One of the things we wanted to do in this exhibition is show that there are different editions of these prints. So one early printing will have one coloration, and a later printing maybe has a very different coloration. So for these two, you can see the cartouche, the little band I was talking about. This is blue striped over yellow. And then in the later impression, it's just yellow. And if you compare back and forth these two different impressions, the colorations are a little bit different, and the inking is also a little bit different.
Would that be a choice, or just from the unpredictability of mixing your colors?
Part of it is choice, and part of it is, you know, it wasn't just one printer printing these. There would probably be like as many colors as a different printer and a different person mixing the inks and a different person printing them on the paper. So some of it is choice, and some of it is just the sort of factory-like production of these works.
Sure.
And today we know the artists are, you know, we know the names, but back then it wasn't the person who was really in charge of this whole production was the publisher themselves. The publisher would usually come to the artist with the idea, give them the money to travel around and do sketches. And then the artist would come back and someone else would carve the block of wood. Someone else would print the block of wood, and then someone else would publish it. So it was really a very collaborative effort. Although the artists now, their name is on the work of art, but there was a lot of different people involved in the production of it.
That's interesting. What was the publisher going to do with them once they were created?
Sell them.
Okay. Got it. Cool. Where do we go from here?
Okay. There's a lot of really beautiful wintertime images in this exhibition because Adele herself loves images of snow and bridges, and this is an example of a bridge. And so did the Japanese. So what we have here is this very beautiful, strangely demarcated bridge. But this is Hiroshige 2. And Hiroshige 1 is sort of the first Hiroshige. But then often artists, after they worked with a teacher for a certain amount of time, they took on their teacher's name once they became proficient enough. So there was a Hiroshige 1, a Hiroshige 2, a Hiroshige 3. And interestingly, Hiroshige 2 married Hiroshige 1's daughter. So they kept it all in the family.
Yeah, I guess so.
And in this one, you can actually see the grain of the wood here in the blue.
Oh, yeah. And the water is, looks like it's like partially frozen, but partially still moving.
Exactly.
And you can see the wood grain in the river under the bridge.
Exactly. So there's another artist in the exhibition whose name is Utagawa Hirokage, who is another student of Hiroshige. And he did what was known as the comical views of famous places in Edo. So he did funny things like people slipping and falling on ice, or people getting drunk under the trees, having a picnic when the cherry blossoms are blooming with Mount Fuji behind them. So some of them are very serious, beautiful images of landscapes, but some of them can be a bit funny as well.
Yeah, these guys are having a great time.
They're having a blast, yes. Well, apparently that's, from what I understand, when the cherry blossoms finally come out, it's like they're not out for very long, so it's a reason to celebrate.
We're entering the next room.
This room really focuses on images of women and actor prints, which is another very, besides landscapes, that was something that was done very, very frequently. There's a wide market for sort of what was called female beauties and as well as actor prints, sort of like, you know, Us Weekly selling today with all the images of actors and all their news. So this is quite a beautiful work called The Heron Maiden. And it's very unusual because it's a color woodblock print. The artist used a silvery substance that was known as mica. And what you'd have to do is put on certain parts of the paper, put a type of glue, and then you use like what's a flour sifter, and you sift this silvery mica onto the surface of the print. And some of it stays on and some of it comes off, but it gives you this sort of shimmery quality.
It's a very subtle shimmer.
Yeah. And another thing that the artist would do, as you can see here in this print in her sleeve, is they would use embossing. So they would have print the paper. They would wet the paper and print it, and then it gives you a texture, usually in women's clothing.
Great.
This artist, his name is Chikanobu. He's very interesting because he used very different inks. He brought what is called aniline dyes into Japan. And if you look at these, the colors are much brighter and much heavily saturated.
Yeah, that red is like the reddest red you could imagine.
Like really, really red nail polish is what it looks like. And I think some people, when these were first printed, thought they were a little bit garish because their colors were too saturated. But I find them really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned the embossing. There's also, if you get very close to these prints, you can see areas in their dresses and in their that are embossed.
That's ridiculous. How do you even come up with that? It's a tremendous effect.
It is. It's very beautiful and very subtle. Mm-hmm. This one's kind of funny. So this is an actor print. It's a scene from a kabuki play, and it's an actor making sashimi. So the sushi lovers of the world are really enjoying this print.
Well, it looks like he just started. The fish is fairly whole.
Yeah, he hasn't chopped it up yet, but he's got a very scary-looking knife getting ready to do so.
We're walking through the Clark's current exhibition, Japanese Impressions, Color Woodblock Prints from the Rodbell Family Collection.
This next room of the exhibition focuses on an artist whose name was Hasui. And one of the things that happened after Japan opened to the West and became much more industrialized, the tradition started dying out, the ukiyo-e tradition of color woodblock prints. And so artists like Hasui was involved in a movement that was called the Shinhanga movement, otherwise known as a new print movement. And so what they did is they trained in the West and they knew about Western styles of art, but they printed in a traditionally Japanese way. So if we look at this print, for example.
Which looks like a photograph.
Yes, very, very photorealistic. But what they did is they used the same kind of production methods as ukiyo-e printers did. And one of the things they did is they use various printing techniques to create textures in the background. So you have a wood block and you put the piece of paper on top of it and you rub the back in various ways and it creates these kind of textures that we see here in the sky. You can see the same texture here in the sky in this Hasui. And another thing they would do is they would put ink on the block and they would sort of smush it so it moves sort of from one color into another in this sort of seamless way.
And it creates a sunset or like the effect of water and reflection.
Exactly.
It's really amazing.
And I mentioned the snow before, and in some of these prints, what we see, you think you're looking at snow that is just the sheet of paper underneath it. But what the artists would do is they would cut a separate block with just these tiny little chinks of white and then print that with white ink at the very end. So the white really feels like it's popping off the sheet and it looks like snow falling in the sky.
Yeah, I definitely would have guessed that it was paper showing through, but either way, it would be so hard to get it there. Because how would you carve the image and leave the paper?
Leave that blank. I mean, it's possible to do, and some artists did do it that way, but in this way, actually, some of the marks may have been done that way, but then afterwards, they would usually have this one special block. And if you look, the white of the snow is slightly lighter than the beige of the paper. And then here, what this artist did, Hasui, is he had his Japanese characters, but then also a little sign of a flower as his stamp. And then we still have the printer's and the publisher's marks on the left-hand side.
The dimensionality is amazing, like how can feel the snow falling in front of the buildings and this person standing in front with their snow footprints going behind them. It's incredible, absolutely incredible.
You often see these devices in prints by Hasui where you see the person from the back with an umbrella, which is sort of traditional. A lot of these were being created and sold to and marketed for a Western audience. Of course, they had a Japanese audience as well. But here you are the person when you're back to them. You walk into the footsteps of the person and you sort of experience the view right along with them. So I mentioned Adele Rodbell's very interested and just loves bridges. And there were a lot of bridges. It was very much a walking culture in Japan. So of course, people needed to, get across large bodies of water. But this print I find this is another Hasui, to be very inspirational. It's like this amazing old wooden structure bridge. And then under the bridge, you see these boats going by. And it's really all about water and light and the beauty of bridges as a sort of compositional device.
It's very serene.
Yeah. And this is the first print that Adele ever bought. And it shows her interest in not only bridges, but also in rain. So you see this rain pelting down on these people as they're barely holding their umbrellas up, walking across a bridge. And this is the one on the advertisement that you see in the billboards. That's kind of wonderful. And this is Hiroshi, who has a different mark and a different sign. And one interesting thing about Hiroshi is he was very much marketing to the West, and he signed his prints both in his Japanese name with a stamp, his own stamp, and then he also signed it in English.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't necessarily have noticed that because you're used to seeing it on most kinds of like prints or art that you would see, but yeah, that's right. That's the only one that has a handwritten sort of signature underneath. There are some ceramics here.
Yes, this is another part of Adele's collecting that she's very passionate about. I think she's almost more passionate about the ceramic vessels as she is about the prints. And these are all created by an artist named Hamada, who had a sort of worked in the arts and crafts tradition in Japan. And he was very interested in these very simple utilitarian forms. And I must say, when I first saw them, I couldn't really appreciate their beauty. At first I thought, you know, they're so simple, but then the longer I looked at them, the more beautiful they become. I think in their very utilitarianism, this is just a jar, a bottle, a vase, but they have these very sort of abstract vegetal decorations on them and very beautiful glazes. There aren't many city views. Most of the views in the exhibition are landscapes, but there are a few scenes of Tokyo, and this one by Hiroshi. You see a street after the rain and the water sort of sparkling on the ground, and you can see the various structures above it and a sort of dark evening light. And again, this is the artist who signs in both Japanese characters and then English on the bottom.
All of these are, they're not the same size, but they're similar size, like similar constraints. What made them, what dictated that? What was the had to happen that they're all kind of the same size?
It was a tradition, and these the size is called oban, and there's sort of very specific styles, there are very specific sizes of prints, and this happened to be the size that was probably the most popular, the one we know the best. There were slightly larger sizes, but for the most part, there were smaller sizes of prints.
And is it just the paper they were making? Do you know why the sizes, how they came up with them?
The paper could have been larger, and the blocks could have also been larger, but it was just sort of a tradition that they worked in, and a tradition that was held quite dear until about the 1950s. And then the next room, we see the paper getting much larger. And these are artists that are not working in the ukiyo-e tradition, but artists that are breaking out of that tradition and working in a more Western tradition. So this artist, Saito, is working in a different tradition, which is he's carving his own blocks and he's printing his own blocks. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of, you see a lot of Japanese elements in them in terms of the Buddhist architecture and the trees and things like that. But he's working in a very different tradition, which is sort of going the opposite direction from the Shinhanga, which is called Sosakuhanga, which is sort of creative prints, working sort of doing everything on their own.
And this is from 1955, and it's much more abstract.
Yes, much more abstract, much more modern. And you see what we did with these more contemporary prints is we put them in different frames as well. And this print as well, this is called Gion Kyoto. We see, again, a little bit more abstract. And you can tell it's a building. You can tell that's a pathway that they're walking on. But it has this sort of hidden areas in the front and the back. And this one very much reminds me of Taro Ando's architecture. Mm-hmm. Sort of think about that sort of hiding and revealing that we see walking into this building, for example.
That's what I was going to say. For people who don't know, Ando did the new Clark building.
Did the new Clark building, exactly. And if you walk out into it, into the terrace, into the reflecting pools, the view is hidden and then until it's revealed. And that's sort of, I find that very interesting to think of that as Ando being Japanese. And this one, again, you see the grain of the wood, but again, it's used more compositionally than it was in the earlier prints. And here he also additions them, 66 out of 150, which again is sort of a Western tradition. And he became very well known and very seriously collected in the 1950s and 60s, well, more 60s and 70s in the U.S. And a lot of these artists, their fame has kind of risen and fallen and then risen again, just based on fashion usually. This is the artist who we saw in the first gallery, Sekino. And what we see here is called Six Jizo at Yamashina, and it's supposedly clay figures that were carved in memory of six young women that had died. So it's sort of an homage print. And again, it's also signed and editioned and dated by the artist.
I don't think you could tell what that is unless you had told me what it is, because there's foliage, like kind of a wheat feeling, in front of them. And then I wouldn't have guessed that they were figures, not people, like what they were representing.
Yeah, they're sort of these effigies, and then behind them there's this red sunset, sort of a bit ominous looking, but very evocative. So now we're in the reading room of the exhibition, and because we wanted it to be a very visually beautiful exhibition, which is really about the objects, we didn't have a lot of text, so we thought it would be important to have books that people can sit down and read in our reading room afterwards and learn a little bit more. Then we also did a timeline because we figured some visitors may know a lot about Japanese history and culture and some won't. So for example, we have sort of the beginning of Japanese woodblock printmaking up through the Great Wave, the very political leaders, up to the 1970s. So the timeline sort of covers the chronology of the exhibition. One thing that's really hard to describe unless you see it, which is especially difficult for us right now doing this on a radio show.
Saying if you come here, there's help.
Yes, exactly. So the Japanese woodblock print, as I mentioned before, every color uses a different woodblock. So what we did is we used images from a specific woodcut to show you what it looked like with first the black key block, then you add the yellow, then you add the red, then you add the blue, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until you come up with the final print. So we have a sort of visual model of what it looks like as each color is added on.
That's very helpful, I think. My fiance does lino cut prints and so creates a similar thing as he, builds them up, and I don't understand what he's doing. Like, my brain doesn't work that way to be able to create it. So even seeing it like this, I know I still couldn't do it, but it does help to see like how they figure it out.
I find it's that way with a lot of printmaking processes, and it can't be with photographic processes as well. It seems so abstract, but I find like the second, once you understand it and you understood the techniques behind it, you can appreciate the works of art in a different way. Not necessarily better. You can appreciate them just in a different way. Like, oh, I get it, how he made that particular color.
This is a beautiful exhibition, and I am so lucky that I always get to come and get a private tour from you at the Clark here. Thank you so much.
Thanks. We love having you here. It's always fun for me to walk around and get out of my office and look at the art.
Jay Clark is the Manton Curator of Prints, Drawings, and Photographs at the Clark in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Japanese Impressions, Color Woodblock Prints from the Rodbell Family Collection, is on view through April 2nd. To learn more, visit clarkart.edu. That link will be posted along with this segment at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.